Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 42, recorded December 30th, 2010.
Welcome, everyone.
Hello.
Happy New Year in a couple days.
Yes.
This is a momentous occasion because it's episode 42.
42 is the answer to the universe, you know.
Well, yeah, something like that. It's also our combined ages when we got married.
That's true, because that's the answer to the universe.
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Hoopy Frood.
Yeah. If you know what a Hoopy Frood is, then you also know where your towel is. So
yes.
There you go.
Okay, do you have fishy updates?
Yes, I do. I've got something of note. The rainbow fish look like little rainbow fish, and they're growing more quickly now that they're away from the celestial pearl danios. The celestial pearl danios are also growing more quickly now that they're in the tank with the adults, and one of them, at least, looks like a tiny adult. He's got little celestial pearls on him.
Oh,
so
good.
It's just funny to see that almost as soon as I removed the CPDs from the little spawning tank, how fast the rainbow fish began to look like rainbow fish and had the long dorsal and anal fins.
No, is that because they were just already to that stage, or do you think there was a little bit too much competition going on?
Well, probably some of both. The more competition they have for food and the more waste and so on, and possibly growth-inhibiting hormones the other fish may be releasing could have an effect on that, and as soon as you get that out. Of course, water changes help with all of those things, too, and I've been trying to keep up on those. Yeah, it could be some of both, just the fact that they were about that age and the other fish were inhibiting that somewhat. But
okay.
It's cool to see. I'm going to have a nice little school of rainbow fish to put in with the parents not too long once they get big enough.
That will be lovely.
Yeah.
So today we are going to be talking about Paludaria and Riparia.
Indeed. Let's talk about Paludaria first.
Plural Paludaria and singular Paludarium, yes?
Yes.
All us Latin fans. Okay, what is a paludarium?
Well, the word paludarium comes from the word palude. At least in Italian, it's palude. It might have a different ending in Latin, but it's the same thing. It means a swamp or a wetland. And wetland, of course, is just a nice way to say a swamp. It's the more accepted term these days because it sounds better. If you say, save the wetlands, it sounds good. If you say, save the swamp, it doesn't sound so good. there's a poor connotation with swamp, but whatever you call it, they're important parts of the ecosystem. But the idea is, with a paludarium, you're recreating this part of an ecosystem where you have a land area and you have a water area.
Okay.
That's the basic
that's
thing
the basic
behind
idea.
It.
Mm-hmm. All in the same tank.
All in the same, yeah, enclosure of whatever type it may be. It could be a tank, it could be something else, technically, but
okay.
Yeah.
It could be a swimming pool.
I guess it could be.
So what do you keep in the paludarium?
Well, the nice thing about that is you can keep certain terrestrial animals, or organisms, I should say, such as plants as well as animals and whatnot. You can keep some of the nice terrestrial organisms you can keep in, including certain lizards, certain of the more terrestrial amphibians, things like that. As well as terrestrial plants that require soil, and they can't always be moist, some of them. Especially a lot of climbing plants work well, but we'll talk more about that a little later. You can keep semi-aquatic organisms in there, such as frogs. And you can also keep aquatic organisms, as long as the water feature is large enough. You can keep fish in it, for example. So there's lots of different things you can do. There are even certain kinds of crabs. Like, I think they're called vampire crabs, or some of them are called vampire crabs, that are actually adapted to a terrestrial existence and can reproduce in fresh water and so on. I haven't any direct experience with them, but I've read about them.
No, just out of curiosity, why are they called vampire crabs?
I'm not sure.
They're all named Edward.
They have really bizarre coloring. I don't know if that has anything to do with
it. Are they red?
Some of them, yeah. Huh. Maybe that has to do with it. I don't know. But people keep those in planted paludaria, and they spend more time on the land than they do in the water, for example. So there are a wide array of creatures you can keep in a paludarium, and it's even possible to keep you know, some terrestrial organisms, some aquatic ones, as long as you're careful that they're compatible.
As long as they don't eat each other.
And other things that you need to worry about, too.
Okay, well, tell us some about some of the setups that you've had in the past.
Okay, well, let me tell you about my first attempt to make a paludarium. This was a long time ago, like 20 years ago. That sounds about right. It might even have been longer than that. Approximately 20 years ago, I had some tiger salamanders, and I wanted to make an interesting enclosure for them. So I took a piece of glass that I found somewhere, which happened to be the right size, and I siliconed it in the middle of a 10-gallon aquarium.
So vertically? So it was cut in half?
Approximately in half, but only about... The glass was probably about 3 inches high.
Oh. Okay.
3 or 4 inches
so
high.
So you made a little wall.
So I made a little wall halfway... Separated the aquarium approximately halfway. Not exactly, but something like that. Siliconed it shut in there so that I could separate it, and then I put soil, I believe it was potting soil, I put a drainage layer of gravel on the bottom, and then some kind of soil separator, I don't even remember what, and then I put soil on top. And I planted Pilea cadieri, which is also known as the aluminum plant. It's a pretty good terrarium plant, so I figured that might work, and I had a lot of it around at the time. So I planted that in there, put some pieces of bark in there for the salamanders to hide under, and I had a basic paludarium. Now, this is not an ideal paludarium. It was not, for a couple of reasons. One is because I didn't have any sort of filter in there.
In the water part.
So I just had to change water. It was the only way to keep it clean. So
of course,
I had
if it's only about half of a 10-gallon tank, and you don't have it filled higher than 3 inches, that's not going to be that hard to do manual water changes.
No, it wasn't too hard, but it was kind of a pain. The other thing is, with the glass being that high, I also had to put some rocks or something in the water so that the salamanders could get in and out of the water easily.
So they had like a
ramp. Yeah, because it's very easy for a lot of semi-aquatic creatures to drown if they can't get in and out of the water very easily, and also to dry out if they can't get into the water easily. So you have to be careful to make sure that there's some provision for them to easily enter and exit the water. And so I did that. Put something in there. The other problem is that soil eventually got icky, predictably, with salamanders living in there. And there's not a whole lot you can do about it beyond replacing a large quantity of the soil and replanting it.
Which would mess up the plants.
Which messes up the plants. You have to take them out, replant them later after you've taken out a quantity of the soil. So that's a really primitive paludarium. Like I said, this was at least 20 years ago. And I wouldn't repeat that particular style of paludarium because of the problems inherent in cleaning it, basically.
Okay. So that was your first attempt?
Yes.
Did you have a second attempt?
Some years later, I made another one. This one was also for a salamander, as it happened. Only one, though. And this...
Was it Commodius Rump?
Yes, it was our salamander, Commodius Rump.
I loved his name. His name really was Commodius Rump, because he was just kind of a big butt, and he just...
Chubby salamander, yeah. He was pretty lazy, and, you know, salamanders get that way, some of them. And he just liked to eat, so that's what we named him. Somebody found him in a window well and brought him to us. So that's how it worked out.
We weren't even married yet.
No, not when we first got him.
No, we were just engaged. That was a long time ago, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, tangent over.
In any case, he had a paludarium that was a little easier to keep clean. I had a nice piece of driftwood, sinking driftwood, that was purchased for use in aquariums. And I arranged the piece of driftwood so that it created a big raft or island, and he could easily climb up onto it and climb back down into the water and put about, you know, another 4 or 6 inches of water, something like that, in the rest of the tank, and a filter in the corner. And I don't think this was appropriate, not the ideal setup for tiger salamanders, but worked okay for him.
So it counts as a paludarium even if there's no dirt in any of it, just the fact that they can get up out of the water.
There's a permanent land area, yeah.
The tank isn't filled with water all the way up to the top, and they can get out of the water.
Right. I mean, it could be splitting hairs a little bit to try to find the exact definition of what a paludarium is, but basically, yeah, it still counts as a paludarium because it's got a land area.
Okay.
And he did fine in that for a long time. One problem was that I don't think we had a lid on it, and I think one day I put too much water in there, and he crawled out, and he got lost, and that was dumb. I don't believe in making paludarium without a lid these days, except, well, maybe in certain bizarre circumstances, maybe not, but in general, just put a lid on it. I mean,
it was very sad when he crawled out and ran away.
Yes, and then my sister-in-law found him sometime later in a corner, desiccated and dead, and it was sad.
Oh.
But this was, once again, quite a few years ago, and I've learned quite a bit since then. But it was okay, because it had a filter in the corner, just a little box filter in the corner, I think it was. And so the water stayed more clean. I think I did put fish in there once in a while, basically for a commodious shrimp to eat.
Which he did.
They also lived in there for a while before he got them. So that was a really basic paludarium, too. A little bit improved over the first version.
Okay. Tell us attempt number three.
Okay. I wouldn't even call this one an attempt, because this one was a success.
Success. Tell us the success story.
Okay. I took a 20-gallon long for this one. And I built, well, I took a simple fountain pump. It wasn't very big, but I put a simple fountain pump in it and rigged up some tubing so that the fountain pump was on the right side of the tank. And the tubing brought the water from the fountain pump over to the left side of the tank, all the way over to the left side. Mm-hmm. On the left side, I put in some gravel, and I made a little wall, kind of a retaining wall, out of needlepoint canvas and lava rock. It was arranged so that the lava rock held the needlepoint canvas up. And there was this little wall of...
But it would act as kind of a little bit... The water could still pass through from the gravel there, so it was kind of getting filtered
a
little bit by
it
the
would
gravel.
Come, the water would come out of the water portion over to the other side of the tank, hit the gravel. I think it actually hit a rock because there was kind of a waterfall I made in there. And it would go through the gravel, percolate through the gravel and into the, through the needlepoint canvas that the lava rocks were holding up. There were several pieces of lava rock holding it up. It would percolate back into the water, the pool area. And so there was basically a, you know, that's a sort of a biological filter going on, and it also mechanically filtered gunk out of the water. And then I planted the water section and the land section, actually, both of them, with pothos. It's also known as Shindapsis or Devil's Ivy, Solomon's Ivy. It's got a lot of different names. If you look up pothos, though, you can, or pothos vine, it's called all sorts of things. It's often mistaken for philodendron because it looks very similar to philodendron. So I planted it with that. I also put some terrarium moss that I bought at the pet store on the land side over a lot of the gravel. And then I put in some manzanita branches.
Yay,
which we
manzanita.
Collected in California.
Twainheart.
Yep, when we were visiting out there.
Manzanita is a great plant. If you don't know what it is, go look it up.
Yes, it's a great plant for use in terrariums and in other places. And anyway, we put those in, and then we had a fluorescent light on it, and we also had a spotlight, an incandescent spotlight, because the faunal inhabitants were anoles. That's what we started out with. We put our pair of anoles. We had a male and a female anole in there. And they did really well in there. It stayed nice and humid and warm because of the lighting, which were on timers. And in the winter, we would, you know, brumate them by turning off the incandescent lamp for a few weeks and just having the fluorescent one, and that was enough for them.
Tell us what brumate is.
Brumate is kind of like hibernating, but not as severe. And animals that live in fairly warm habitats often need to brumate during the winter, or they often benefit from brumation during the winter. And anyway, these
humans would benefit from brumation. We just all, nobody goes to work for like a month, and we all just stay home and take a nap.
An extended winter vacation works for me. But they would lay eggs regularly because we had a male and a female, and they laid a lot of eggs. Most of them got too wet to hatch, but at least one of them, at least one of them ended up hatching. Yeah, it's it. So it worked really well that way. It was fairly easy to clean. I just had to take the lights off, take the lid off, and stick a python in there, and I could stick it in the gravel and siphon gunk out of the gravel to keep that clean. Probably not ideal, but it worked okay. And then in the water, I put a few feeder platies that we picked up at the pet store, and after a while I had a lot more than a few. They went crazy in there. But it looks like it's just about time to our break, so we'll talk a little bit more about this paludarium when we come back.
This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-9000. 0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it?
Okay, we're back, everyone.
That was fun.
Okay. So anyway, the platies bred like crazy in there, and it was fun to see them. I had this paludarium going for a couple of years, maybe 3 years.
It looked really nice. It was very pretty.
It was a nice one, and I had to clip the pothos and take it out periodically because it grew like crazy in there. And one thing, that's good for nutrient export, though. You're getting extra nutrients out besides the water changes, which you have to keep up just like you do in any tank. One thing that I did have to be careful about is that the pothos roots would actually try to grow into the fountain pump. And so,
that could be a problem.
Yeah, I actually had to cut it back. I would have to open up, of course, unplug it, and open up the fountain pump and rip roots out of the thing to make sure they wouldn't grow in too far and mess it up. But they would try. So that's something you need to be careful of. Some plants, not just pothos, will do that. But
are there any other caveats we need to be aware of?
Yeah, there are. A lot of plants won't work in a paludarium. A lot of plants are not designed to be able to function in a place where the roots are constantly wet. They will just rot. And on the other hand, there are a lot of plants that do really great in such a setup. I've only mentioned a couple, the pothos and the pilea, that I've used, but I've used others in terrariums and aquariums and so on that will work.
Could you use pretty much any aquatic plant, or would they not work so well because they want all of themselves to be in the water?
There are some that really won't do all that well if they're out of water. There are some that will do just fine. There are some that will need to go through an adaptation period, and then they'll do just fine. There are a lot of plants that are sold as aquarium plants in pet stores that aren't aquarium plants, but they'll do just fine in the paludarium with their roots wet. So I would say, really, we can't go through a huge list of them, but
do your research
do a
online
little research.
About your plants before you plant them.
Yeah, look up bog plants, bog aquarium plants, look up paludarium plants, and you'll find quite a few that'll do well.
Okay.
And there are a lot. There are some fun ones that I've had. I like creeping fig. It's awesome. I love creeping fig. It's so cool. But there are lots of others that'll do fine. Some other common house plants that work, spider plants work. Peace lilies. You've probably seen those little vases with the peace lilies and the betas, which aren't a great idea. Notice I said aren't a great idea. But the idea is they can grow as a paludarium plant. So if you have a tall paludarium, you could consider that. There are a lot of houseplants that can be adapted for the purpose. One caveat to think of is organisms don't always mix in that they could eat each other. But sometimes organisms don't mix because they could be toxic for each other, even if they don't eat each other. Like firebelly toads, for example, they have toxins in them, so you might not be able to keep them with anoles, for example. I'm sure there's someone out there who has, but successfully done it. But the idea is just do your research before you decide what you're going to do there. It's important to check and make sure that the organisms are compatible before you put them together.
Okay.
And,
Okay, great. So now we are going to move on to riparia. What is a riparium?
Okay, well, the word riparium is another Latin-based word. It's related, actually, to the word river. But it means a shoreline aquarium, basically. And it's used in aquarium because, like in Italian, riva del mare means the shore of the sea.
Okay.
And riva is related to ripa.
You love his accent. Oh, that's great.
It's fun. But it means an aquarium usually doesn't have the water all the way full, and instead of having a land area, you have plants that are emerging from submerged pots or containers so that the plant is on the surface. And often you use some little rafts, like of some floating foam or something, to help support the plants, but there's no true land area. There's not any soil, there's not a dry land surface in there.
Mm-hmm. So would a mangrove kind of tank count as a riparian?
It could.
Or is that different?
Yeah, that could count. If you're growing mangroves in a tank, I guess that could qualify as a riparian. Yeah. But basically, a riparium is really cool. It looks like it looks amazing. If you want to check some pictures out, you can just Google riparium, or you can go to www.ripariumsupply.com. They're not paying me to tell you that or anything.
They just have great pictures.
They just have some great pictures up of how to make them. They actually have materials to help you make one. But the basic idea is you have some containers, little planters, that attach to the glass up above the surface, or up above the bottom of the aquarium. They're not touching the bottom. They're up just below the surface of the water, attached to the back with suction cups or with magnets. And they have plant-specific substrate in there. And then the plants come up. And they also sell these little rafts, which are hard to describe. But they're little rafts that sit on top of the water, and the plants can be woven in up through them and sit on top of them, and so it looks like you have a land area.
So, is a riparium, does it only have the plants, or do people put fish and things
You put fish and other aquatic organisms in there. You could even put some small semi-aquatic organisms that could sit on top of the rafts and the plants and then go into the water. I think the rice paddy frog, or the floating frog is also called, I think they'd probably work really well in there, because they're small and they could sit on top of the little rafts and so on. And you can also keep aquatic organisms, this is what I'm excited about, you can keep aquatic organisms that don't do well with other aquatic plants that are too violent with aquatic plants. Maybe they eat them. Well, I don't know, you know, herbivores might not work too well, but what I'm thinking of, African clawed frogs. We could keep our African clawed frog, Keto, in a riparium because he wouldn't come in contact with the plants.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, there are only a few plants we can keep with him. But if we could put him in a riparium, it would look awesome, and it would be healthy for him. One thing is that plants that have access to the CO2 in the atmosphere grow quickly, and so emergent plants would be growing more quickly, and it would be great for nutrient export, because African clawed frogs are messy. They make all kinds of, you know, waste. Yeah. So plants like that growing out where he wouldn't bug them would be really cool. So I'm kind of hoping it's going to work. I think I want to try it out. I don't know if it'll work for sure.
So if we get that done as a project, we will keep you posted.
Yeah, and we'll put pictures mm-hmm. up of it. But anyway, go to the research pages and or research page for this show, and I'll put some links up to ripariumsupply.com and to some ideas for paludariums. You can also look back at Robert's pictures of paludariums. I'll put another link up to that, because he has a great-looking paludarium that he made and sent a picture of on a show about a month or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so you should check that out. I'll put that on the research pages as well. So that's about it for today.
So enjoy those.
Okay, we have a little special guest.
Yes, our daughter wanted to say something, so go ahead.
Hi.
Is that all you wanted to say?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.